Welcome to Inspiration at Work, where you will hear from business leaders from around the world on what they are doing at work and through work to make the world a better place. This is the most positive talk radio show on the planet, where we have evicted the tenets of cynicism and criticism and set up residence on Inspiration Boulevard, right in the heart of Atlanta, Georgia. And now, your host, America's Chief Inspiration Officer, Terry Barber.
Welcome to another edition of Inspiration at Work, and we are so excited that you have chosen to join us today. And say hello to the folks. Tamara, I'm glad you're back in the studio with me. What a great show we have coming up.
We do. It's going to be exciting afternoon. And I do want to give a big shout out to Jay Early, who is the Director of Comp Benefits and HRS at Habitat for Humanity. And I've known him for 10 years. He is just a fabulous, gracious person, and thank you so much to Jay for helping to make all this happen.
Exactly. And speaking of our guest, it is Stephen Seidel. Stephen, hello, and say hi to the people.
Hey everybody, it's great to be with you.
Yeah. Hey, Stephen, I am especially excited that we have the opportunity to chat today for a number of reasons, but not the least of which is last year in May, we actually, the firm that I work with, we actually conducted a little survey nationally about who the most inspiring nonprofits were in the country. And your organization, the Habitat for Humanity International, actually came up on top of the list as being most inspiring. Yeah, so people have really recognized and appreciated the fact that as an organization that, boy, you guys do a great job about mobilizing people and casting vision and certainly making the world a better place.
That's really exciting to hear. And, you know, what's very interesting is that for those of us who are lucky enough to kind of do this work every day, you know, it's for us, it's the volunteers who inspire us. I mean, that's what's really special. And to hear it from a survey like that and to get a sense that the work that we do provides inspiration to others, for us, we really think it's the volunteers and the people who are so generous in giving of their time and their resources and their talent that we get inspired from, and it gives us plenty of energy to keep doing more of it.
Well, you know, thanks for mentioning that, because I think what you've just described is kind of the nature of how this thing we refer to as inspiration really work. It's contagious, and it's like it begets more of it. So, you know, you give and you get, and you can't give more than you get.
Well, that's a terrific sentiment, and I do think it's kind of, to use kind of a new technology term, it's kind of viral. You know, it just one person inspires another, and that person inspires the next, and the whole thing just kind of keeps growing and flowing, and it's a terrific thing.
Well, we would like to start our session by giving, first of all, our listeners just a little bit of background about the role that you play there with Habitat and how you got there. Would you share that with us?
Sure. Well, as you know, your listeners may know or may not, Habitat really is a truly global organization. We operate in over 80 countries around the world. And my role is with our global programs department. So what we do is support the programming efforts, the home building, the volunteer engagement, the support to families, all the different programmatic activities and initiatives that our local and national organizations are implementing day in and day out in their local communities. Our job is also to help them improve those programs, to evaluate the effectiveness of those programs, and to introduce new program initiatives when our strategic direction may call for that. So, and for me, it's a really wonderful opportunity. I've been involved with Habitat now for 24 years. I started volunteering with Habitat back in March of 1987, and then was a volunteer in my hometown of Minneapolis-St. Paul, Minnesota, And a couple of years later, I became the executive director of the Twin Cities Habitat affiliate, and was in that role for 15 years. And then for the last 6 or 7 years, I've been working for our headquarters operation in Atlanta. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me, very personally, to really get a feel for the scope and breadth of the work that we're doing around the world, and to really just see how universal the need and the desire, the aspiration for a decent home is for everybody, no matter where you might live or what your income might be or what your traditions and employment are. Everybody wants and aspires to have a decent place in which to live.
I think it's beautiful, and I do want to focus primarily on the work and the impact that you're having in and around the globe. But one of the things that you just mentioned that I always like to pull out for some of our listeners is they're thinking about exactly where and how they're going to end up in their career. One mm-hmm. of the principles that you just displayed is this principle of faithfulness. You started off as a volunteer, and I'm sure at that point in time, you had no idea where this path was going to end up at in terms of the role that you're playing.
That's exactly right. I could never have envisioned, having really built a really exciting and inspiring career with an organization. Once when I picked up the phone and called our fledgling local Habitat office in the Twin Cities back 24 years ago, you know, it was I remember it actually very vividly. I was walking out the door to go to my regular job, what my job was at that time, and the morning news show was on, and they were interviewing former President Jimmy Carter, and he was working in New York City, working with Habitat, working on a home, had his bib overalls on and a kerchief around his neck and his tool belt on. And, you know, we think now, I mean, that's a pretty commonplace image, not just to see President Carter, but lots of, you know, famous people rolling up their sleeves and swinging a hammer. But back in those days, it was out of this world, kind of. You never saw that sort of thing. And I remember really doing a double take, and to see a former president working with his hands, with a tool belt, you know, and really working, not just doing a photo op, but really doing the work. It got to me, and I thought this has got to be some kind of remarkable collection of people doing this Habitat thing. So when I called him up and found ways to volunteer and have been involved ever since.
You know, I work with folks that are in consideration of what their careers will be, and it's just such a good story to hear how you've been able to get your arms around and become aware of what inspires you and where your passions are, and to align that with your work.
Yeah, it feels wonderful, and I also have been very fortunate to have had the opportunity to meet with and talk with a lot of the volunteers who participate with us, who work in businesses or do other things for their careers. But as they think about kind of their kind of life journey, not just their professional career, but the kind of difference they want to make in their community, the opportunity to kind of connect with an organization like Habitat and to volunteer either through their company or on their own or with their faith community, with their congregation or with their family, whatever it might be, to have an opportunity to give to the community is often a way in which individuals have an opportunity to feel fulfilled themselves, and so I've seen that happen time and time again, and it's a very rewarding experience to see folks go through that that kind of opportunity to give to the community.
Stephen, I noticed that in reading more into the background, and in particular in some of the new happenings in and around Habitat for Humanity International, that you've got some new initiatives coming up. It's not just the same old, even though as good and as fantastic as it was, we've actually got some new things that are going on, and one of which in particular I noticed was something you referred to as NRI, or Neighborhood Revitalization Initiative. Am I saying that correctly?
That's exactly right, Terry, yeah.
Can you share with us kind of the vision and the scope of that?
Sure, I'd be happy to. You know, our work is very kind of clearly understood as volunteers getting together, working with a family who's going to be working alongside the volunteers to build the home that the family will eventually occupy. But as especially the last couple of years, and as your listeners I'm sure know and recognize, the economy has been difficult. The number of foreclosures and just the housing market has been hit terribly hard by the recent economic circumstances. And what has happened is that the impact that's had, not just on families, which has been profound, but also on communities. When homes are vacated and they go into foreclosure, there's a real kind of downward spiral that can happen when communities lose the investment of the people who are living in those homes. So as we looked at what we needed to do in response and in light of these economic circumstances, we found that we needed to be concerned not just with the families that we work with, but be concerned also with the communities in which we're building the homes and in which the families that we're building the homes for are going to be living, you know, hopefully for many, many years. And so what we've done with the Neighborhood Revitalization Initiative is to look at our work and see how our work can complement the efforts of other organizations in those communities, whether they're, you know, churches or businesses, schools, other civic organizations, other community-based organizations, how what they're doing and what we're doing can be aligned to really have the impact of turning around communities that might be, you know, kind of in that kind of downward spiral, and to stabilize those communities and revitalize them so that in the long run, everybody who lives there, including the folks that Habitat's working with directly, can know that their home is going to be located in a community that's going to lift them up and be a great place for them and their kids for a long, long time. So we're really excited about that. What we found really is that our local affiliates are very excited about this kind of initiative. It allows them to tell a kind of a different story and to reach out and build new partners and new relationships with other organizations in the communities that they're working with. And we're getting more and more interest on the part of our local affiliates every day that really want to take this approach to think not just about the families that they work with, but think about also the well-being of the communities in which their work takes place.
It's really neat. As I listen to you talk, some of the things that I pick up right away in the midst of our dialogue, and number one, is you allowed the market need to actually cause you to innovate. It didn't stifle you.
It was scary. I mean, I think the economic conditions of a couple of years ago really got our attention. I think they got the whole country's attention, and we really needed to kind of look at what we're doing in the context of that economic reality and reckon with whether what we were doing then was really going to be sufficient to respond to the economic circumstances that communities were facing. And we made a decision that our work currently was good. The work we had been doing was good and valuable, but we just needed to add a little bit broader orientation and use the ability that we have, the assets that we have, to help bring the community together, to connect with other folks who are concerned about families and about communities, and make a stronger concerted force, and put a stronger concerted force together to respond to the circumstances that communities have been facing.
We just applaud you for taking that kind of attitude and those kind of actions, because that's bold. That's bold thinking for a nonprofit who, quite frankly, could have continued to move along as it was doing, maybe in a scaled back fashion, but you could have adjusted and kept on. But instead, you really stepped out and did some new things. Not the least of which, now you've got this network of other partners that you didn't have before.
Yeah, and I think it's what's very true, Terry, and Tamara also, and all your listeners, is that, you know, this neighborhood revitalization initiative was born out of kind of a reality of the economic challenges that communities were facing and the whole country was facing. But as the economy recovers, we're not going back. I mean, we're going to continue to work in this way and to sustain the partnerships that we've developed and to work with communities in a more comprehensive, holistic way. So it was born out of necessity, but it's really become kind of it's going to form the foundation for who we are as an organization for many years to come.
Wow, that's pretty exciting. Would you share with us, Stephen, just maybe one or two particular kinds of partnerships that have been forged? Give people a sense of what that looks like.
Sure. There's probably our earliest example is in the city of Milwaukee. And a community like Milwaukee was probably kind of hit harder by the economic circumstances earlier than maybe some other places. A working class city where the industrial base, you know, has been kind of weakening and eroding. So we connected with a number of organizations in Milwaukee, and we actually and with the support of our great friends at Thrive and Financial, helped to provide some seed money to a coalition that we were able to help form of other housing groups, the local parks department, local schools, a couple of local senior centers, and formed a coalition of probably 15 or 18 different organizations that came together to put together a coherent, organized, comprehensive plan for the North Harambe neighborhood in Milwaukee. And we've been at it now there for about 2.5, almost 3 years. And what we're seeing is a much greater sense of connectedness, a greater sense of safety, a more robust level of capital investment in housing, not just the Habitat homes, but other housing groups and the for-profit marketplace coming together to build more homes, but also improved commercial corridor development, improved conditions in the schools and in the parks in that community. And we just had an evaluation, actually, of that experience, and there's a wonderful kind of leader of the community, a longtime resident, 92 years old. Her name is Mama Donna, and she's been part of our planning meetings from the get-go. And in our conversation with her just in the last couple of months, she said to us, you know, the community is really coming back, and the reason I know that is that people are sitting out on their front porches again. They're feeling confident enough about where the community is headed that they're willing to be out on their porches and socialize and chat back and forth with the folks walking up and down the sidewalk. And there was a time when the community and the residents in the community stayed inside their homes and did not socialize, did not connect with their neighbors. And now the folks in that neighborhood in Milwaukee are out on their front porches, and that's a great indicator for us that the community is coming back, and it's going to be a great place for kids of all ages, men and women, and kids of all ages to live.
That's a wonderful story, and particularly giving us a sense of how it is impacting the city and the community in our own backyard. I'm really wondering, too, with this latest news about Japan, how is Habitat for Humanity International interacting with that, with the tragedy that we're having?
Oh, it's so overwhelming, Tamara. I mean, it's and watching the news unfold, and there's new footage coming in, you know, all the time about the impact of the tsunami and what's happening with the nuclear reactors there, it's really quite overwhelming, and our hearts go out to the people of Japan, those who lost loved ones, those who've had to relocate, those who've been injured, those who've lost their homes and their businesses. It's really very overwhelming. We haven't had a home building presence in Japan, but we have had a volunteer presence, and so we've had a number of volunteer groups, many of them from campuses, what we call our campus chapters in Japan, who their involvement with Habitat would entail going to other countries and volunteering for a week or two at a time. We're connecting with those campus chapters to help prepare emergency response kits, blankets and food and water and in containers that folks who are living in shelters or doubled up with other family members or who've lost power and whatnot, that can have, you know, some additional resources to help tide them through the early stages of this this terrible disaster. As time unfolds and hopefully things stabilize and the rebuilding effort is able to commence, we'll be looking for ways to contribute and participate as the opportunities arise. But I think the first, obviously, just a few days into this terrible disaster, and still events unfolding there, we're watching as everyone is, and certainly praying as everyone is, that that things can stabilize there, and that the effects of the nuclear reactor situation and the recovery efforts of those who are missing in Japan, that those can go forward very quickly, and we pray for all those who are involved in that.
Hmm. Stephen, I know that you have quite a little network, globally speaking, relative to these volunteers that you just mentioned. And one group in particular, as a segment, has to do with employees of businesses who are giving of their time. Businesses are continued to even at times pay them in order to keep an effort or have a hand in helping at Habitat. Can you tell us a little bit about that initiative and what you see as being the benefits to both business and employees when they participate?
Well, we're very fortunate, Terry, to have so many wonderful businesses that partner with us, and many of them are big, you know, name brand businesses. I mentioned Thrivent. We've got Whirlpool and Dow and Home Depot, and I better stop because I'll forget some and leave some off, and I don't want to do that because we have so many awesome partners. But many of them are local businesses and smaller businesses too that are very generously involved. And you know, what happens is that by and large in these companies, it really starts kind of bottom up, that there's somebody in accounting or somebody in human resources or somebody in maintenance who says, you know, my church got involved in Habitat and we had a good experience there. I wonder if my company would be willing to do that. And so the seed gets planted and that person talks to his boss or talks to the folks in HR or whatever, and the conversation begins about how the opportunity might arise for the company to be involved. And now that we have as many companies involved as we do, many companies actually do see the benefits of it. There's certainly some visibility and presence in the community that can be strengthened enhanced by, you know, doing a Habitat project in the community. But I think what's even more profound is the impact within the community, within the company. When a company's employees are actively involved in doing on behalf of the company and allowed by the company to do work that meets their values and aligns with their beliefs and priorities, that worker is going to be much more committed to and loyal to that employer, and have an opportunity to work with other employees in a very different way and exercise leadership often in very different ways. So the experience of having a crew of 10 or 15 or 50 or 100 employees from a company come out and work on site on a given day, or maybe spend a week working on site with us, leads to benefits that that the company is able to experience all year round, and through greater employee energy and loyalty, and it's just the great stories that are able to be told from employees working together on a work site and doing something that's so enjoyable and fun and leaves such a visible, tangible reminder of the company's values when that home is finished and the family's had a chance to move in.
That is so very much what you said about the leadership. I see that you get the energy from participating in a not-for-profit because you have an affinity and you want to make a difference. But then what some learn from that experience is that they also get to demonstrate their leadership. Mm-hmm. And it's a very a key point that I hope a lot of people take away from this. You know, I also want to say that I was very fortunate to be able to stay overnight in a Habitat home in Americus. And I was so impressed with how well-built, comfortable, that the home was, as well as you being aware of energy efficiency at this point.
Oh, we're very big on energy efficiency. And it actually makes a lot of sense, you know, the cost of energy and the cost of oil and other fossil fuels continues to rise, and you know, folks on limited incomes are affected by it more than anybody. And so it's important that the homes that we build are not just going to be affordable in terms of the purchase of the home, but the actual operation of the home, that it be that the utilities be affordable, that the materials are going to be durable and last a good long time. So we're very concerned and very attentive to energy efficiency and great quality materials. And you know, one of the questions that often comes up is, you know, volunteers building a home. I mean, how good a home can that be? And you know, oftentimes volunteers are so passionate about building the home very well because they're building it right for that family that's working alongside them. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll drive in three nails where one might have done. You know, that our homes aren't going anywhere after our volunteers are done with construction. So it's a great experience.
I had the privilege of actually being on a build in my hometown in New Orleans post Katrina, and what a joy that was. Hey, Stephen, at some point, we would love to have you come back and bring one or two of your sponsors and have them talk about how they've benefited from the bill. What a cool program that would be.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. Well, we'd love to do it, and I'm pretty sure we could find plenty of takers on that invitation.
Yeah, that would be really neat, and it'd help inspire other business to want to get involved. So that could really be a winner. Stephen, we have really covered just a tremendous amount of content, and I appreciate so much your heart, your enthusiasm from a personal perspective, not to mention just the global impact the organization is having. How can people reach out to you or to Habitat if they want to get involved and participate or give?
The best way, Terry, would be our website. It's a very easy one to remember. It's www.habitat.org. And if you there's places right at the top of that landing page where there's a little bar, you can click on that about how to get involved. And it can take you to the instructions about where to get involved in your local community, how to support our work anywhere in the world. It's got everything that we're doing these days, all the latest updates on where we're working and many of the partners that are part of our work. So that website should be a great resource for all your listeners to check out.
Fantastic. And we will also be very sure to post that on our website. So today we've been listening and talking with Stephen Seidel of Habitat for Humanity International. And what a fantastic interview. What a wonderful project. And I just cannot encourage you enough, if you're listening, to get involved, to pick up the phone or go to the web and find out how you can participate and be involved, both in inspiring and being inspired. You've been listening today to Inspiration at Work. I am your host, Terry Barber. And thank you, Tamara, my co-host, so much for being a part. And hey, we're looking forward to reconnecting for next time at Inspiration at Work. And until then, we hope that you today will be the most inspiring person that you know and keep on inspiring everywhere you go. Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Inspiration at Work on the GII Network with your host, Terry Barber. Find us on the web at www.inspirationboulevard.com and follow us on Twitter at Inspiration Boulevard.